Dama, the best of human beings. Na abi druyanti. Never become malicious. Utebya, toward other living beings. Yarhi, because. Na, never. Atma, the self or soul. Kalevaram, this body. O King, one who is advanced in intelligence and eager to perform welfare activities for others is considered best amongst human beings. An advanced human being is never malicious to others. Those with advanced intelligence are always conscious that the material body is different from the soul. Please repeat. O King, one who is advanced in intelligence and eager to perform welfare activities for others is considered best amongst human beings. An advanced human being is never malicious to others. Those with advanced intelligence are always conscious that this material body is different from the soul. Purport. In daily life, we find that when a madman commits murder, he is excused even by a high court judge. The idea is that a living entity is always pure because he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he falls into the clutches of material energy, he becomes a victim of the three modes of material nature. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 5.14, Nakartritvam nakarmani lokasya srijati prabhu nakarma phala samyogam svabhavastu pravartate. The embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. Actually, the living entity or soul does not do anything. Everything is done under the influence of the modes of material nature. When a man is diseased, the symptoms of the disease become a source of all kinds of pain. Those who are advanced in transcendental consciousness or Krishna consciousness are never envious, neither of the soul nor of the activities of the soul under the influence of material nature. Advanced transcendentalists are called sudhiya. Sudhi means intelligence, sudhi means highly advanced, and sudhi means devotee. One who is both devoted in highly advanced intelligence, highly advanced in intelligence, does not take action against the soul or the body. If there's any discrepancy, he forgives. It is said that forgiveness is a quality of those who are advancing in spiritual knowledge. Sudhiya sadavo loke naradeva narottama nabi dru yanti bhutebjo yahi natma kalevaram O King, one who is advanced in intelligence and eager to perform welfare activities for others, is considered best amongst human beings. An advanced human being is never malicious to others. Those with advanced intelligence are always conscious that this material body is different from the soul. Om Gyanatamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umanitam Gena Tajmai Shri Gurave Namaha. The first sentence of the purport really grabs the mind, and it's a little hard at first to understand how it's connected with this verse and purport, or the rest of the purport. So in daily life, we find that when a madman commits murder, he's excused even by a high court judge. Now this is a very common phenomena, legal phenomena in America, where I'm from. Is it common in India that people are excused because of temporary insanity or insanity, and then they're committed to the state insane asylum? When I first read this, something came to my mind which is just so incredibly monstrous and evil that I couldn't get it out of my mind. This was probably about 35 years ago. There was a person in America, I'm going to describe this very straightforwardly. He was a homosexual, and he was discovered as being the biggest serial killer in the United States history. He killed over 33 people. And what he would do, he would go to these gay bars and he would allure another man with the idea of engaging in sense gratification. He'd take him to his apartment and he'd give him some drug in his in a drink, and then the man would go to sleep. And then he would cut him into pieces and put him in his refrigerator and freeze him. So ultimately, he wasn't executed. He was found to be insane. Now, that's a very obvious example of someone. First of all, his gender affectation is something that's not normal. But what to speak of killing all of these people? And then, for what purpose? So that he could cut them up and put them into his freezer and keep them on a long-term basis. So when he was discovered, you know, there were all of these, you know, cut-up pieces of different human bodies in his freezer. So, now, that's an obvious example of someone who's insane. Now, how this is connected with the verse and purport, actually, anybody that comes into the material world and is driven by the modes of material nature, he's in a very mentally diseased condition. Very, very common is that he acts against all kinds of common sense. Sai Shishi Gornitai, Sai Shishi Radha Rasa Bihari, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman. In the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it's described Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajaguna Samudbhava Mahashano Mahapatma Vidinami Havarinam. So the it is lust only, my dear Arjuna, which is the greatest enemy of this world. It's born out of passion, out of rajas, and is later transformed into wrath. And this is the greatest sinful enemy of the world. So people do things that are not sane, that aren't logical. They act against their self-interest. And this is a very, very common thing. When I was growing up, it was very common on television or in magazines to see advertisements for cigarette smoking. Now, that's something that since has been pretty much banned in America. Can't smoke in public places. I don't think it's quite as pronounced in India. But it always used to be that a person would be smoking, and there'd be a beautiful woman, and then he'd be smoking with her, and it just seemed like they were enjoying, you know, the highest pinnacle of happiness in the material world. But then later on, the same person that was trying to enjoy because he was influenced by Madison Avenue, the advertising industry, contracted emphysema, lung cancer, and died a very painful death. So this in itself is just a crazy act, you know, to smoke these hot fumes which are impregnated with chemicals to make them even more addictive by the tobacco companies. And the number one killing disease in America amongst men is still lung cancer, even though they've banned all this advertisement. There's still some advertising going on, but they have these big things, you know, this is, the Surgeon General has determined that this is injurious to your health and can cause lung cancer, emphysema, heart disease, like that. But they target the young people, like people from 15 to 18, knowing that if they catch them, and then they've got them for life, and they can make an enormous amount of money off of them. So this is the nature of the material world. Lord Rishabhdev, in his instructions to his hundred sons, describes Nunam Pramata Kurute Vikarma Yad Indriya Pritya Apranoti Nasaru Manye Yata Atmanoyam Asanapi Kveshada Asadeha. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living, and then he engages in all kinds of sinful activities. Now, he doesn't know that he's received this material body because of his past misdeeds. He also isn't aware that this material body is the source of all of his suffering. So then Rishabhdev says, therefore, I think it not befitting an intelligent person to engage again in sense gratification, whereby he repeatedly gets one material body after another. So nunam pramata, pramata means madness. So it's madness, you know, what material life does to people. So Krishna consciousness actually is the beginning of the process of becoming sane and then returning to a normal condition. Now, in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's a description of the powerful forces, psychological driving forces in the conditioned soul. Icha dvesha, samutvena, dvandva, mohena, bharata, sarvabhutani samoham, sargayanti, parantapa. So every living being that comes to the material world is overcome by icha and dvesha, the desire and also envy. And this drives him throughout life. This is the nature of the conditioned being. Somehow or other, the jiva in the spiritual world, he sees Krishna as the cynosure of everyone's love and affection. And he's thinking to himself, this little blue boy, why can't that be me? Why can't I be the center of everyone's love and attention? So there's a combination of a desire to enjoy like the Lord, and also a concomitant negativity towards the Lord. This Krishna, you know, I should be there. So then the living entity comes into the material world and he becomes conditioned by the modes of material nature. This conditioning is very, very powerful. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya duratya. Almost, it's impossible to overcome. But then if one surrenders to Krishna, then one can start to be released from the modes. The guna, sometimes Prabhupada translates as ropes. So the jiva, the material consciousness, is tightly bound by these ropes, these three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. So here, this is Lord Vishnu. He's encouraging Pitru Maharaj to forgive King Indra. There's an interesting verse in purport in the ninth canto. This is in the pastime of Parshuram. Parshuram has just killed Kartavir Arjun, and the Kshatriya dynasty 21 times over, and he comes back and reports this to his father, Jamad Agni. And Jamad Agni is a Brahmin, and as a result also is Parashuram. So he describes how actually you shouldn't have killed this king. You know, he's a representative of all the demigods, he's a representative of Krishna. The better that you had forgiven him rather than killing him. And then he describes how actually forgiveness illuminates the soul. And Krishna is pleased by someone who's forgiving. So it's a very interesting point for devotees. We hear, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, when the Gaudiya Math started to, even in his presence, started to, Gaudiya Math members started to jostle for rooms in the Bug Bazar temple. And he would say, forgive and forgive, and they would fight. You know, they get into like all kinds of political wranglings. And they couldn't forgive each other. They would offend each other and take offense. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, forgive and forget or else how shall we live? So why is this forgiveness such a significant feature? Actually, it's something which is intrinsic to the soul. There's nine reliable symptoms of someone who's come to the stage of bhava. This is one of the ways we can determine whether one's actually there. I mean, there's people, one can go to different tirthas in India and find people that are faking it. You know, there'll be tears will be coming down their eyes when they hear kirtan or in front of the deities. But even actors, they learn how to cry. You know, they can shed real tears. But there's nine reliable anubhavas. And the first one is shantir, and it's this forgiveness. So this is actually an intrinsic characteristic of the soul. It's there. It just is covered when one is in a conditioned state. But what's really significant is in Janmagni's statement is that it pleases Krishna if one is forgiving. And it's actually a quality of a Brahmin to be forgiving. So we understand from Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu the parameters within which a devotee should function in his devotional career. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karmadinavitam anukulyena krishna anu shilanam bhakti uttama. So anukulyena krishna. So one should, let me give the full translation. I'm thinking I'm teaching a Bhakti Shastri course, and for the Bhakti Shastri students, this is in the forefront of their mind once they've taken nectar of devotion. But when first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of material desires and knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy. And one must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. So this anukulyena is a very important element. It's part of Sarup Lakshanam, you know, the primary characteristics of pure devotional service. It's always there. It's very prominent. So when we render service favorably to Krishna, we can say that Kamsa, you know, his desire was to kill Krishna. I mean, he was always meditating on Krishna, so in one sense he's Krishna conscious, but because he lacked favorability, we can't consider it uttama bhakti. So the desire in the heart of the devotee has to be to please Krishna, and Krishna actually has to be pleased by the activity, and we can determine that. Krishna makes it very clear through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, you know, what's pleasing to him. So if we understand that it's pleasing to Krishna to forgive another person, another devotee, for a mistake he's made and we've suffered as a result of that, then a devotee who's interested in his spiritual development will do that. And we find that it's illuminating because we can start to appreciate this other person. Now, in the last chapter, Brahma is trying to influence King Prithu to forget about the last horse sacrifice. And he makes the point to him that by providential arrangement, impediments have been placed in the way of the execution of this last sacrifice, horse sacrifice, Ashwamedha Yagya. And, you know, there was an enormous endeavor that was, that Prithu Maharaj had engaged himself and his subjects in the kingdom to perform this. So, as a Kshatriya, it's natural to try and respond in with force against the perpetrator of the impediment, King Indra. But because it was such a powerful arrangement, and it was providentially arranged, this is the point that Brahma made, to try and reverse something that's coming from providence, entangles one deeply in material thought. Okay, so there's a sequence. Kama Esha, Krodha Esha. Okay, one does things in material consciousness driven by the desire to enjoy the senses. When that desire is thwarted, when trying to fulfill that desire is thwarted, then Krodha comes. Prabhupada describes anger as a younger brother of lust. So, And what takes place for the jiva, what happens to his consciousness, if he forgives, then there's an illumination. One comes to goodness. Okay, so there may be some distress created, and Brahma, in the purport to this statement by to Parashuram by Janma Agni, it's described that discussion with Brahma, that there may be a lot of distress with providential arrangement, but we shouldn't be unhappy about that. We should see the hand of the Lord in our life. And actually the Lord has, we should have confidence. Later on in this chapter we'll see there's a description, and it's actually referred to by the commentators and the famous Tate Nukram Pam Shuksham Ikshamana verse in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, that one should be confident that the Lord is looking after our best interest. It's just as a father, a son, has confidence that his father is always benevolent. He's always looking after him. Sometimes the father may be very pleased with the son. He's behaved himself very well and gives him an embrace, gives him a ladu, and embraces him, and is very affectionate. But at other times, the son may misbehave. So out of the duty of the father may chastise or punish the son. But the son still, he knows that his father is acting in his best interest. He understands that he's just doing his best to help him, to train him for his future life. So this is the kind of confidence when we have reversals in life that we should have in the Lord. That he's actually doing this, as described by the Acharyas in their commentaries on this Tate Nukam Pam Shuksham Ikshamano verse. Actually, I should probably give the translation of that because not everybody may know it. But one who always seeks your compassion, this is the Mahavakyam on dealing with distress in the material world. One who always seeks your compassion and thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions, understanding that they're coming about as a result of one's past misdeeds, and one goes on rendering service to the Lord with body, mind, and words, and he offers obeisances from the core of his heart, then that person becomes eligible to enter into pure devotional service. So it's actually his birthright, Sadayabak. These are the last words, the last Sanskrit words in the translation, indicate it's the birthright. Just as the oldest son in a Vedic family, what does he have to do to get the inheritance of his father? Anybody know? It's a very obvious answer. It may be almost too obvious to occur to anybody. What does one have to do in order to get the inheritance of his father if he's the eldest son in the family? What's he have to do? Anybody? That's right. He has to outlive his father. If he dies before his father, then too bad. He doesn't get it. Right? So the Acharyas say that one simply has to stay alive in Krishna consciousness, and then it becomes he becomes an heir to the legacy of entering into pure devotional service. So to see, so one has to see that actually when we have reversals in life, when we are in the distressed condition, rather than pinpoint, oh, this brahmachari, Krishna Das, he's done something horrible to me and this is why I'm suffering. I hate him and I'm going to seek revenge. For the pain that he's caused me, I'm going to give him even more pain. So this is the nature of dvesha. This is the anger or envy that comes when desire is thwarted, when there's impediments. So, and obviously one becomes degraded by such consciousness. The krodha is driven by the mode of ignorance. So the consciousness of the living entity becomes even more covered. He becomes less Krishna conscious. He's covered by the material energy. And then he really loses his sanity. Now, there's a very interesting verse in Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatan Goswami. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunaya Shravanadi Shura Chite Koraya Udaya. The pure love for Krishna is eternally established in the heart of every living entity. Can't get it anywhere else. It's already there. You've got it in your heart. Devaki Sutta Prabhu, you have it in your heart. Somehow or other, it's in Asim Krishna's heart, even in my heart. Pure love for Krishna is there. But it's covered. that's covered over by lust, anger. Sai Sisi Gwanitai. Sai Sisi Rasa Radha Bihari. Rasa Bihari. Sai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman. So that covering is there. So what do we do about it? And Shravanadi Shuddha Chitta Kare Udaya. So then when one engages in the process of Krishna consciousness by hearing and chanting, then the heart is purified. Shuddha Chitta. The mind becomes cleansed of this contamination. So we can see there is a progression that we go through as devotees. And the Kanishta platform, when one starts up devotional service, he's on one end of a spectrum. You know, it's just like when the living entity initially comes to the material world, he's overcome by these dualities of Icha and Dvesha. You know, he sets himself up as a competitor to the Supreme Lord. So he sees himself, the grossly conditioned material, materially conditioned living entity, sees himself as the center of the universe, as the controller, as the enjoyer. He's play acting as God. This is actually his consciousness. On the other end of the spectrum, when someone has achieved prema, you know, he's completely at the lotus feet of the Lord. He's returned to his natural, his normal, sane condition. He sees them, he's fully situated as the servant of Krishna. His senses are completely purified. He's able to interact with Krishna, you know, through his transcendental senses, through his siddha deha, through his spiritual body. You know, he's no longer covered by these gross, these blunt material senses, fully purified. So we're somewhere in this transformation from being the center of the universe to having Krishna as the center of the universe. So in the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness, the Kanishta Bhakta, you know, he's got some of this center of the universe-ism. You know, he's feeling himself like that. So therefore, it's very difficult. And one of the characteristics, one of the symptoms of the Kanishta Bhakta, the Kanishta Vaishnava, he's Vaishnava because he's accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's trying to serve his spiritual master, but he has a lot of trouble getting along with other devotees. And what to speak of non-devotees. He's still kind of the center of the universe, right? So he's thinking that the universe is there to satisfy me, satisfy my senses. He's not seeing himself as a servant, he's seeing himself as a master. And when we're trained, you know, Prabhupada taught us to see everyone as Prabhu. You know, we call each other Prabhu. Prabhu, you know, sometimes we say Prabhu when we're angry at someone that's gotten in our way. You know, we've got a certain plan and we, Prabhu. You know, but that's not the mood. You know, Prabhu, when we say Prabhu, it's not just a word, it's a whole mood. Pranati Bish. You know, where the Majjhima, he's actually offering obeisances. He has respect. So the point is, as we become purified, the devotee becomes uncovered and he gradually begins to understand the position of other devotees. And from that understanding comes a respectful attitude. And he actually has more than respect, he has a loving attitude. So he tries to establish relationships, and it's much easier when he's on the Madhyama platform to forgive because there's so much realization. This devotee, he may have made a mistake in dealing with me. He may have just, you know, taken the last ladu on the maha plate, which I had my eye on. You know, but he's trying to serve Krishna too, so I'll forgive him for that. I won't grab it out of his hand and pop it in my mouth and be angry with him. You know, there's a respectfulness and a loving mood that starts to awakening on the Madhyama platform. Why? Because one has a deeper, his relationship with Krishna deepens. And he sees the other devotees as very dear to Krishna. He sees the other living entities as parts and parcels of Krishna that are suffering horribly. Now, there's a very famous verse where Prahlad Maharaj is pacifying the Sringadeva. And Jiva Goswami says that this describes the mood of the Madhyama. Naivo dvije paradratiya vaitaranya stvadvirya gayana mahamrita magnachita socetato vimukachetasa indriyarta mayasukaya baram urvahato vimudhan. Oh, best of the great personalities, this is Prahlad Maharaj to Nrisimhadev, I'm not at all afraid of material existence. For wherever I stay, I'm fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. Mangamrita. You know, I'm absorbed in this ocean of transcendental ecstasy. But I'm very, very concerned about those fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans, Baram Udvahato, for maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. So this is the mood of the Madhyama. Now, Srila Prabhupada, as a Mahabhagavat, came to the Madhyama platform, and there's different pastimes where he demonstrated this deep compassion that he felt for others. Giriraj Swami was riding with him in a car in Chennai once, and it was at rush hour, and they were going by this bus stand, and there were these extremely long queues of people waiting to board the bus. And Prabhupada saw that, and he actually, tears were rolling down his cheeks. He said, they have to work so hard because they've forgotten Krishna. Now, not only do they have to wait in queue to get on the bus, but then they have to travel like an hour, 2 hours on the bus. And then that's twice a day, you know, coming and going. And then there was another time when, again in a car, and they rode by a golf course. And Prabhupada asked the devotees, what are they doing? And then one devotee explained the game of golf to Prabhupada, how they have this club and they hit this little white ball, and then they get it in this hole, which is marked by a flagpole. And then Prabhupada, again, he started crying, they try so hard to forget Krishna. Now, interestingly, you know, it seems like an odd thing. We go by so many suffering people. You know, you go into any railway station in India, and you'll see very crippled people, you know, people, they have no fingers because leprosy has eaten away their fingers, and they're begging. And in India, one tends to shut it off. You know, you just kind of block it out of your consciousness because it's just so all-pervasive, you know, that people in very difficult and distressed circumstances. But the, you know, how is it that a devotee can actually experience compassion? It's not just experience the compassion, but actually be so driven by compassion that he'll do something like go to America with 40 rupees in his pocket, 7 chunks of Bhagavatams at the age of 69, have 2 heart attacks, you know, crossing the ocean in a freighter, and then start an international society. What causes that level of compassion? What's the experience of consciousness that a devotee goes through? They experience such happiness. And there's such an ocean of transcendental bliss that an advanced devotee experiences. And he has an understanding of the absence of that happiness in a conditioned soul who's durashaya. He's taken shelter of the false shelter of material energy, thinking that he can enjoy in this situation. But actually, every effort that he makes to enjoy is destined to end in suffering and distress. Every single effort. But he just can't get it. He can't quite understand it. So, then the Madhyama is driven to help this person to open his eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, to preach, and go through all kinds of austerities to help the materially conditioned soul come to sanity, you know, come back into his relationship with Krishna. So the points that that Lord Vishnu is making is that an intelligent person, a devotee, should be eager to perform welfare activities. And what are welfare activities? Ultimately, it's to help someone come to Krishna consciousness. This is the greatest welfare activity. Prabhupada would describe book distribution in this regard. This is a very strong book distribution temple. So I'm sure a lot of devotees have realization of how powerful a welfare activity this is and how much Prabhupada's pleased by it. I did that service for 16 years. The first 16 years I was a devotee. And I was always amazed at how Prabhupada had such a capacity to reciprocate with devotees that were distributing his books. We can understand when Krishna is pleased, because then we experience transcendental pleasure. Krishna is pleased, and then he deputes Srimati Radharani, who's in charge of Lodini Shakti. She's the personification of Lodini Shakti, to shower this devotee with bliss. So it was such a blissful service. So we know that Krishna is very pleased by that. Now why? Because Krishna, even more than we want to go back to Godhead, wants us to come back to Godhead. This is Krishna's mood. He feels some pain that his part and parcel is in this crazy condition of trying to enjoy separately from him. So then, Lord Vishnu is also making the point that an advanced Vaishnava, he's never malicious to others. He doesn't act. You know, you can see that prakute kriyamanani gunai karmani savashaha ahankara vimuratma kartahamiti manyate. That this jiva, the soul, encaged in this body, he's driven by the modes of material nature. He's under the influence of his false ego. This person's misidentifying himself as this body. So he really can't help it. He's just driven by the modes. He has very little choice in the matter. He's not the doer. The modes of material nature are doing these things. In one sense, he is the doer. What he can do is he can opt to serve Krishna. This is the one free will that the jiva has. He can serve Maya or he can serve Krishna. But when one is grossly covered by material consciousness, he can't even choose that. He can't choose until the Madhyama very kindly comes to him and offers him the opportunity to take up Krishna consciousness. This is the only time that he actually has a chance to be the doer, to choose to serve Krishna. So we, you know, the devotee, the preacher, he can send a lifeline to pull him back to his sane condition. All right, so let me stop here. I'll read the verse again, and then maybe there's some questions or comments. O King, one who is advanced in intelligence and eager to perform welfare activities for others is considered best among human beings. An advanced human being is never malicious to others. Those with advanced intelligence are always conscious that this material body is different from the soul. So are there any comments, corrections? Ramroop, is there a microphone? Just 1 second, you'll get the microphone, then we can all hear.
Hare Krishna. Prithu Maharaj is considered like authority on deity worship. Means he achieved perfection by worshipping the deities. Now, right? So, when he knew that Indra will be agitated if he performs 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas, what is the... is there any specific reason why he wanted to do 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas? Because it's only a karmakanda, karmakandic action compared to deity worship that he is an authority. So, is there any reason why he wanted to do? Because it's obvious that he didn't want to become Indra. So in that case, why? What is the purpose of doing 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas?
You know, before I gave class, I asked for what's the name of the devotee that wrote this condensation of the Srimad Bhagavatam? He was here the last time I was here. Narayani's husband, Purnaprabhya. So I asked if I could get a copy of this because it's been a long time since I read the fourth canon and I wanted to get the storyline straight. And I didn't read that part of the storyline, so I'm a little, you know, I'm not really sure. A lot of times, you know, in these Bhagavatam pastimes, there's demonstrations of, that leaders will play a role, you know, with the Acharya principle in mind, you know, that, but I honestly don't know the answer to that question. Do you know? No? Veda culture was so all-pervasive, you know, in these times, you know, and the yajñas were very much prominent then. So, you know, here we just have, in Kali Yuga, we just have the Sankirtan yajña. So it's a bit alien to us, you know, these discussions and descriptions and, you know, why there's such a motivation. Because we don't pay so much attention to that. We understand, actually, Jiva Goswami, you know, in his commentary on Prahlad Maharaj's delineation of the 9 methods of pure devotional service, indicates that if one chants just once the holy name of Krishna, all 8 other methods are automatically completed. So we understand the potency of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And so a lot of times we don't so much pay much attention to these other descriptions, but this is coming from the Vedic age. And of course in different yugas, there's different yuga dharmas. And so that's something that I'm familiar with. Prabhu?
In between you are speaking the word madhyama.
I'm sorry?
You are speaking the word madhyama.
Madhyama, yeah.
What does it mean in this context?
Okay, madhyama means the middle platform of advancement in Krishna consciousness. There are 2 definitions, actually there are 3 definitions given in Prabhupada's books, 3 different sets of definitions. And in each set, there's the Kanishta, Madhyama, and Uttama. So, the first definition is given by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And the symptoms that the Kanishta, Madhyama, and Uttama have are based on faith. Faith in Shastra. If someone has a lot of faith in Shastra, then he's also going to have a lot of knowledge. If I really believe that what's said in the Bhagavatam is going to be a tremendous benefit to me, then I'll be sure to read it. So automatically the knowledge will come. So there's gradations. So the Kanishta, he has weak faith and little knowledge. He can be easily defeated in a philosophical discussion, and he may be temporarily overcome by faithlessness. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that after a short interlude of faithlessness, he'll again come to his senses and remember that what his spiritual master said and get back on track. Now the Madhyama has very deep faith, so he becomes addicted to reading. But his knowledge isn't complete. For the most part, he's knowledgeable and can preach quite effectively, but when there's an opposing argument, he may not always be able to defeat that argument. Now the Uttama has deep faith and conclusive knowledge. And because of that conclusive knowledge, he's 100% engaged in Krishna consciousness. There's no any kind of disruption to his Krishna consciousness. He's completely absorbed. Okay, so now those three definitions are actually definitions of eligibility to advance. Prabhupada often, this is quite a technical discussion. You ask the question, I'm just studying this now and preparing to teach Nectar of Instruction. So it's right on the top of my head. So you'll get a short preview of the Bhakti Shastri course. Okay, so this is eligibility to advance, these descriptions. So just like, are you or were you a businessman? Okay, so let us say that you're a businessman, you have a good business sense, okay? So that good business sense is a qualification to become a Kropati, okay? Become a very wealthy man, okay? Now, not every person that has a good business sense is going to become a Kropati. You know, there's destiny there too, right? So it's like that. Have strong faith in Shastra and to be knowledgeable in Shastra are good qualifications to make spiritual advancement. Now, the definitions of spiritual advancement, the levels of spiritual advancement, are given in the 11th canto, 2nd chapter of the Bhagavatam. And the indices or the factors which consider whether one is spiritually advanced or not is the basis or is based upon love for Krishna and attachment for Krishna. Okay, so on the preliminary level, the Kanishta, he has a little bit of love for Krishna, enough so that he's going to chant rounds, he's going to worship the deity. But that love isn't so expansive that he includes Krishna's servant within that. Okay, so he doesn't act so nicely with the other devotees, and he doesn't have compassion for the innocent non-devotees. Okay, so when that love awakens a little bit more, comes to the Madhyama platform, then that love also includes the devotees. He has love for them. He tries to develop deeper relationships with them. He exchanges in 6 loving ways. He guyamakyati dadati pratigrinati guyamakyati prichati pungte bojayate chaiva shadvidhim pratilakshana. So he offers gifts in charity, accepts charitable gifts from other devotees. He guyamakyati prichati, he reveals his mind in confidence, he inquires confidentially. He offers prasadam and accepts prasadam. These are the 6 ways that devotees exchange love. So the Madhyama becomes very expert at that. And he also experiences compassion for those that haven't understood the relationship with Krishna, and he's driven to help them come to Krishna. Okay, so then going even beyond that is the Uttama Vaishnava, the Uttama Bhakta, the Uttama Bhagavat. The Madhyama, or the Uttama, the Mahabhagavat. And he has very, very, very deep love for Krishna. So deep that Krishna's completely purified his senses and he can see Krishna everywhere. He sees Krishna in the heart of Asim Krishna. So there's tremendous respect and love that he has for Asim Krishna. He sees Krishna in your heart. This is the way Prabhupada, you know, anybody that came into Prabhupada's presence felt such profound love. The Prabhupada really loved him. And therefore, like that, he was ready to give his life, dedicate to Prabhupada's service, because it's such profound love. But the Uttama Vaishnava doesn't preach. He actually, he feels so humbled in the presence of the glory of the Lord that he feels very inadequate. He feels himself to be very lowly and fallen. It's a genuine feeling. It's inconceivable for us. But from time to time, you know, he comes to the Madhyama platform and preaches. And then he has tremendous power, tremendous Shakti, because he's got so much love in his heart. The Krishna Prema is there. And so then he becomes like Prabhupada, just could spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Everything he did was just so empowered. Things, he just didn't make mistakes in management. He was just so empowered. Krishna was with him at every step of the way. Rupa Goswami was with him, you know, completely empowered by the parampara. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was right with Prabhupada. So all this potency just came out on the Madhyama platform. And so he encouraged his disciples, don't remain a Kanishta. Come to the Madhyama platform. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, in his commentary and the definition in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, describes how after hundreds of births of offering articles to the deity on the external platform, the devotee comes to understand the transcendental nature of mantra and understand the depth of devotional service and the stature of devotees. And when he understands this, then he takes a very aggressive stance to try and advance spiritually so that he can function on the Madhyama platform. But within ISKCON, we get a very, very quick, you know, eye-opener to the Madhyama platform. You know, most devotees, you know, after I'd been a devotee 2 months, I was out on the street distributing books. And this is how we grew up. You know, we were trained right from the very beginning to function on the Madhyama platform. Now, you know, we may not be, you know, like Giriraj Swami makes the point in his Nectar of Instruction course, is that there may be different symptoms that are mixed. Someone may be mostly Madhyama but still have Kanishta symptoms. Or someone may have strong faith but may not know how to deal with devotees nicely. You know, so there may be some mixing. So we should always move towards perfection. This is the progressive mentality that a devotee should have to try and improve himself. I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble with Braja Hari for going...
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Towards the beginning, you had mentioned that when we are overpowered by desire and envy, and also around Krishna, when we are around Krishna, we watch him being the center of attention. We want similar thing, and that's when we are brought down to this material world.
Right.
However, doesn't Krishna say that whoever comes to my abode stays with me eternally?
That's right. So there's a certain achincha factor there, you know, you can see that there, it doesn't make sense. Chincha means logic and reason. So achincha means beyond logic and reason. Jiva Goswami comments in the 10th canto I think the third chapter, that unless one can accept achincha in the Supreme, one can't accommodate an understanding of the Lord. So there's this achincha factor. How is it? It's a craziness. Prabhupada, this question was often asked of Srila Prabhupada. He said, don't worry how you got here, worry about getting out of here. Okay, so that's our main business. Somehow or other, we got into this mess. Now, the main priority is to get out of the mess. Okay, so we have a very, very powerful process for getting out of that mess. And that's first, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, then Raganuga Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, and Prema Bhakti, to get resituated in our original position as Krishna's tiny part and parcel and loving servant. And then we'll be happy. We're not happy in our materially conditioned state. It's a very miserable situation to be in. Some people may think they're happy, but when they really wake up to what's going on, when their body starts falling apart in front of their eyes, you know, old age, disease, and imminent death, they're not happy at all. They're very, very unhappy because everything that they've invested in all of their life is being stripped from them.
Hare Krishna. What I'm really trying to ask is that if you are in Krishna's abode, what is the guarantee that, you know, you might get thoughts of, you know, envy and desire, and you'll end up coming back again?
Well, the thing is that Krishna says several places in the Bhagavad Gita that you'll, once returning, you'll never come back again. So sometimes, you know, just like when you were a little girl, you may have gone into your mother's kitchen when she was cooking and accidentally touched a pot that was hot, and you got burned. So you can be sure that on the basis of that experience, you'll never touch a hot pot again, right? So when we come to the material world and go through many lifetimes of suffering, not much likelihood that we'll want to return to this place and go through it all over again. So someone who's come and he goes back, they never come back again. You know, how it happens there, I don't know. That's a big discussion and it's beyond me. I accept the achincha feature of the Lord in that discussion. Maybe at some point it will be revealed to me, but it's not a, but that's how Prabhupada dealt with it. He said, don't worry about how you got here, worry about getting out of here. Okay? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.